number two. This is exciting because we've got a very special panel coming up. And I'm going to invite my friend Paul back onto the stage. This is not his first time on the stage. Awesome talk earlier. And now I'm going to hand it over to you for this next panel.
Thank you, Dimitrios. So for today, what we wanted to do, as many of you are out there are building products. Some of you might be building companies. We get the pleasure to talk to many companies out there, the founders that are building interesting companies in this new space. We thought to actually bring some of the ones that we've spoken to recently together to discuss this. And joining me today to moderate this panel, before I introduce the actual panelists, is Sandeep, joining us from London. I think, Sandeep, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, hey, Sandeep. Thanks for joining us. Great to see you. So, Sandeep, you head our investments team in Europe, and also look at North America. We get the pleasure of working together a lot and talking to interesting founders out there. So, thanks for joining us. Do you want to maybe add something today? What's on your mind?
No. Look, extremely proud and privileged to be part of this this amazing session that you've put together, and. Yeah, we work in close conjunction and wanted to share, some of the really exciting companies that we have the pleasure of speaking with on nearly a day-to-day basis. And hopefully the audience enjoys hearing from them. So perhaps we'll pass it over to the people that the people are here to see.
Excellent. So let's do that. So we asked the three founders to join us. These are technical founders that have basically chosen to found their own companies in this space, which is probably one of the most exciting spaces to be building your company in. And so let me just introduce them one by one. So I think I see here Pietro dialing in from Canada. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Paul. Good morning, everybody.
Great to see you again. Pietro, do you want to maybe describe what you're building at Transitional Forms and the new type of media that you've been working on? And also maybe for the folks who are listening, tell us a little bit about the stage you're in with the company and sort of the size.
Yeah, for sure. So we started as a creative machine intelligence company back in 2018. My background is in entertainment innovation. So I came from a company that I had sold to Entertainment One. And so I had this, foresight that different AI generators were going to do all these amazing things and unlock human imagination for us. And so I started a company called Transitional Forms a number of years ago, and we've done a bunch of experimentation in different types of AI to create, creative content, from reinforcement learning to LLMs to music transformers. And we're about 10-ish people now on any given day. We're all different hats all the time. And we've created a TV platform that allows you to generate shows, but TV shows by a click of a button.
Awesome. Thanks, Pietro. Thanks for the introduction. I think you also shared a video that sort of illustrates some of the work that you guys have been doing. So maybe we can play that video to bring this some of the stuff that you're building to life in a visual way.
Attention, fellow content creators. Here's a sneak peek of our new Maker app, where real-time AI-generated TV is just a click away. Choose from 2D or 3D templates and simply edit your titles and premise prompts. Or customize further with story beats, music themes and sound effects, and camera filters. You can even swap entire sets in a matter of seconds, customize your cast, and even change their backstories for more dynamic results. To prove the power of this patent-pending tech, we developed a live stream generative variety show called Robots Make TV.
Robots Make TV.
Remember that if it's not broken, you must break it.
Someday you'll be an alien, but only if someone farts on you in our space.
You both suck.
LOL.
And these outputs are all real-time, fully autonomous, and never the same twice.
Because no reality is too weird.
Yahoo!
So connect with us to bring your story worlds to life.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Pietro. I remember when we spoke for the first time, a thought that came to mind was, you know, is this what Pixar looked like in the early days? This sort of new, you know, way of creating entertainment, this interactive movie making. So really great to share that. Maybe then over to Lars, who's the CTO and co-founder at Cordy.ai. Lars, thanks for joining us, from New York, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about the problem you're solving at Cordy.ai and also where you are with the company, which stage, and just to give the folks an idea.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for inviting me. So my background is actually generative models. I've been researching in generative models and been doing a lot within that field. And I've been for many years trying to explain to people why it's so cool. And then suddenly outburst a lot of generative AI, and now it's called Gen AI, and everybody knows why it's cool. So that's amazing. Basically, what we've tried to emphasize with our company is that we want to solve a big pain, that is the medical conversation. So when someone is having a conversation with a doctor, a nurse, a paramedic, they really want to be understood. And that conversation, it can be difficult to be understood because not everyone knows how to actually explain their symptoms in the right way and so forth. And if you're misunderstood, then you can end up in a dire situation. We started out with the very acute field, so the 911 call, when someone calls the 911 number in the US or 112 around mainland Europe, then they're in dire need of help. And to get some assistance from the person, the paramedic that is receiving that call, can be difficult. So we have built this AI that taps into that medical consultation, that medical conversation, and assist the healthcare professional in making the right choice in a matter of seconds. So the AI is listening in, it's understanding what is being said, and then it's giving prompts to the healthcare professional for the healthcare professional to work their magic for the patient and for the better of the patient. We are right now in the company approximately 100 people. We just raised our Series B. We're processed with one of the lead investors in that round, and I'm very happy to join this.
Well, great. Thanks for letting us be part of the journey. And I remember when we first spoke, Lars, I asked you, what's your background? Can you send some material you've been working on? And you send a couple of publications also at NeurIPS, if I remember. And, that's the kind of founders I think we enjoy working with a deep tech background. And I think not only that, but you're solving an incredibly important problem for all of us. So we're rooting for you. And then maybe an last introduction, Josh, thanks for joining us. I think you're, if I'm not mistaken, in Philadelphia. Is that correct?
San Francisco, right?
San Francisco, all right. Even further away. So thanks for joining early in your day. Maybe the same question to you, Josh. So what problem are you solving and where are you at the stage of Martian at the moment?
Yeah, we're trying to make using LLMs more like using electricity. Right now, there's many different LLM providers. It's hard to figure out which one should you use. Most people default to GPT-4, which is the most expensive one. We want to make it as easy as plugging your application into an LLM, just as you would plug an electrical socket into an outlet, right? Such that you don't have to worry about where you're getting your intelligence from, just that you're getting enough of it as cheaply as possible. We're already able to do this today. In fact, on OpenAI's own evals, we're able to beat GPT-4 level performance at a lower cost by routing your request to the right model, right? So you give us your request, we find the best model to run it on, best meaning the highest level of performance at the lowest cost, and then we give you the result.
Yeah, that's incredible. And also there, I remember when I heard about what you guys are doing at Martian and we talked about what we're building inside the group, one of the things being plus one, the first thing I thought was, I want to use what you guys are building. We need something like this. So again, very excited to have this conversation. So maybe, Sandeep, I'll let you do the honors of the first question.
Of course. So look, thanks so much for sharing the introduction. We heard about the myriad use cases that each one of you are solving through your company. So perhaps just to start out, Pietro, would love to understand, in the creative content space, who do you believe to be the incumbent in the space, if anybody? And why do you feel like you're best positioned to solve this problem? It's one of the common questions that we ask in the venture world. So we'd love to hear your perspective.
Sure. So, you know, there are incumbents and various forms of competition. We see generative creativity emerging all day. It seems like every day there's a new tool, you know, Runway ML and Midjourney and Stable Diffusion and all of these amazing tools. We use these tools as well in our pipeline. But at the same time, and this isn't a good thing, there's not a lot of people that are taking exactly our approach. You know, I'm an old VR pioneer, so real-time, interactive, immersive possibilities for immersion have been very important to me from the beginning. So versus these like hard ML approaches with GANs and diffusion models and whatnot, we're going with a real-time approach in a game engine using Unity. So that's our angle right now, and there's not a ton of competition. Like I said, that's not necessarily a good thing. You kind of need competition to prove the future of what you're trying to build. But yeah, I think that's our angle.
Super interesting. And I might pick it up then with Yash. Obviously, I'm sure there's a number of people in the audience have tried to change utility providers, be it electricity or internet and whatnot, and trying to figure out how to get the best performance for the lowest cost. Who do you believe to be the incumbents in your space, and how are you thinking about your positioning?
Yeah. So right now, most people, when you use an LLM, are going to be using a single model, right? And so it's kind of getting people to switch away from using that single model to having a kind of multi-model architecture, one where they're able to switch between many different providers. We can actually do routing for them, right? I think the reason that, you know, your incumbents here, who are these LLM providers, are not going to get the best level of performance is because they're going to focus on their own models, right? They're never going to route you away from their model to one of their competitors, right? And so if their competitor is doing something better, you're never going to see that if you use only their platform.
Fair. And makes a tremendous amount of sense. And last but not least, Lars, you know, the medical space, how should we think about, you know, the medical space solving this critical problem? How should we think about the incumbents in your space?
But I can talk for hours about this, but I'll try to keep it brief and to the point here. I think that we're seeing a lot of companies that are trying to embark in the healthcare space. It's a difficult space to be in. So I'll stick to the point of the ones that we see out there when we go out to the customers, right? And I hope you catch my drift in terms of that, right? Because there is a big difference here. And the ones that we see out there are some of the bigger tech companies. I think that one of the ones that I want to emphasize is Nuance, that has been there for a long time. That is a dictation service normally. They have also gone further than that in all due respect, but are mostly known for the dictation software for doctors, et cetera. And that's the ones that we're competing the most with. But we're having a slightly different route towards providing value to the client, where we're going a little bit higher up the value chain in terms of predicting outcomes for these conversations. So we're actually also having deployments where we are deployed next to Nuance. So it's a finicky space in terms of that. And that's how we try to get in, and we try to be smart on maneuvering our way into the clients.
Awesome. I recall when we were spending time, I think the one thing that we also found when we were learning more about Qordi is that for the doctors in the medical space, pen and paper still seems to be the predominant one. But Paul, let me pass it back to you for the second question.
Yeah. So, you know, for, let's say, all of the change we've seen in this space, companies that are labeling themselves as AI companies, there's a big difference between the companies that are, when we say AI companies, that are really building their own AI core technology. It could be models, could be data sets, could be processes, whatever, and those that aren't. And of course, you know, the reason you're here is because we believe you've built some of those core elements that make you different or set you apart. And I'd love to sort of understand, maybe in your view, what are the things that that set you apart because you've built some AI that without that, you know, your company wouldn't be able to do what it promises to do. Maybe starting with Pietro.
Sure. Yeah. You know, from the beginning, we We've never really labeled ourselves as an AI company. We've positioned ourselves as an entertainment innovation company using AI as the future to unlock these new formats that are coming. So we went through, as Paul knows, we went through a big life cycle of prototyping using all sorts of different. We didn't know where things were going to land, using music transformers and reinforcement learning. We put into a game and a film. Large language models, et cetera. So we don't build core AI ourselves, but we're the glue that holds it together and translates from one generator to the next. It's like, it's art meets science. We're using the science to generate the art. I think that's a Pixar quote even, letting the tech inspire the art and the art challenge the tech. That's been our approach, is kind of like creating that entertainment Lego using different models. And that keeps us fresh too, because there's always something new.
Yeah. And I think to some extent, when you say you're not building core AI technology, but I remember interacting with your interactive assets, whether it's games or the director studio, it's very clear that you're the way you connect these large language models to the Unity engine and then bring it to life in a visual way is part of your AI assets, right? It might be, somebody says it's not your own model, but I think that entire framework and making that come alive in a real-time way, right? I mean, you can see some of your things live on Twitch as you make these movies and people interact, throwing bananas and so on. I think that I think you're underselling the AI, the stuff you guys...
Well, thank you. I should plug to our reinforcement learning game, where we're letting people train neural networks right within the game itself. That's a world first. So yeah, we certainly are creating core AI, but just maybe a different approach than some of these other AI companies.
Thanks, Pietro. And Lars, how would you think about your sort of core AI components for that, that make the way you solve the problem at Qordi different from others?
Yeah, so we need to go through the entire stack from understanding what's being said inside the audio to speech representation learning, speech recognition learning, then natural language processing, and then clinical predictions. That's basically what we have built upon since the beginning of our journey here. And we built it from a process of saying, hey, we need to be on the frontier of science. So we need to also take whatever paper is out there and replicate that model inside our own stack and reproduce the results of that of those models, and go from an outline. We call it internally a kill your darling strategy here. So as soon as someone is coming out with a model, like when the Transformer was coming out in 2018, we found out that we needed to kill some of our LSTM models. Maybe they're coming back again, but that's a different, more technical discussion. So basically, we have tried to learn as much as possible from the research environment, and then try to put some of these components inside our own modeling paradigm. So our core AI is basically the entire value chain from the audio all the way to the clinical predictions, and be able to do that in real time. That's quite difficult because audio is difficult, and we do that in like predictions in less than a second. And we do that with quite complex input sources and also prediction sources.
Great. And maybe let me, just before I go to Josh, one thing that I think, we had discussed, Lars, on this front is, yes, of course, you've got, because of your use case, the real-time need to be able to do this in, emergency centers and so on, to do the transcription, the coding, and the support. So that's one thing that you guys really need to have built in-house to make sure that works. And we also looked at, what are the implications of some of these large, powerful models that are coming out, let's say GPT-4, that you could actually ask to do the tasks you guys are, building into your commercial products? Can you comment a little bit, because you shared some of the evaluations and we went back and forth on that, how you see your ability to, within that specific task, within your domain, based on the data sets you have, to sort of build something that is more reliable, safer, and higher quality for that specific use case?
Yeah, I think that this is a perfect segue to what Yash is building, right? So if we had your tool a little bit before, then we could have utilized that quite heavily. But we've done a lot of that making a lot of those outlets, to use your terminology, in-house. We're firm believers in these more vertical models, especially for a verticalized field like ours, because we can get a lot out of that. You can see some of the papers in terms of, not to bore you too much on that, but some of the papers on being able to answer multiple choice medical QA questions. When the models get really good on that, they decline on some other things. And that's basically our finding as well on our domain, is that we can actually verticalize these models and then they become really, really good at a cost of something else, right? We know that there will never be a pizza delivery call coming into our services. And if it comes in, then we don't need to help on that, right? so basically we can specialize these models quite heavily. And what we've basically been doing is trying to take a lot of the LLMs out there, specializing them, fine-tuning them, restructuring them, and so forth, and also restructuring them in terms of the input modalities. And talk 4 hours about that as well, in terms of actually building that nicely, so that we get something that is at a high precision accuracy and ensuring that it can also run fast at a low cost, right? So,
awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And then, Yash, you I think have hypothesize, and we've talked about sort of the future where we'll have hundreds of thousands of LLMs, and you know, so Martian being the gateway to make it easy to choose which one. How are you building AI into providing that capability to, for example, ourselves, right, that are trying to make these choices on a day-to-day basis, which model for which use case, and so on?
Yeah, this is a question I love diving into. The kind of how are you actually doing this routing that. Because the fundamental sort of piece in routing is understanding these models, right? In order to say, okay, we're going to send this request to this model, you have to know what each model is good or bad at. And that is often quite idiosyncratic, right? These models hallucinate. These models have all sorts of unknown behaviors, right? They're really, really intricate machines. And so what you have to do if you want to route well, is really understand what those machines are doing, right? You have to basically understand them at a mechanistic level, right? How they work internally. And so the core technology we're developing is actually understanding these transformer models, right? You train them on a bunch of data, you get this black box. We are opening up that black box. And we're doing this through a process which we're calling model mapping, right? The idea with model mapping here is to turn a transformer into a more interpretable representation, to say, okay, transformers are hard to study, right? They're these big black boxes. If we can turn them into something else first, something which we can understand better, then we can actually study them in more depth. And that in-depth study lets us do routing better than any other company that possibly could, right? The reason we're able to do this, and actually the part of the reason we started this company, is that if you look at almost any other company, they're often thinking of themselves as a kind of model provider, right? They're saying, cool, we're going to provide these models, we're in competition with other people, we're going to build bigger and bigger models. So when they raise funding, it goes towards building bigger models, right? Our approach is very different. It's to say, let's really understand these models deeply so that we can use them in more fundamentally interesting ways, including, for example, routing. And so that's the core technology we're building, the ability to understand models rather than simply treat them as black boxes.
Yeah, and that's, I think, incredibly powerful. You've built your own models to do this, in fact, right? It's a little bit meta in that way. But, the theme of this conference is LLMs in production. And, we know from a lot of the work we've done that you need to have this kind of intelligent model selection to go into production, and going for larger, always larger models isn't either cost effective or better, best for the user experience. So thanks for sharing that. Over to you, Sandeep.
No, perfect. Yeah. Well, just to change gears a little bit, one of the questions, given the fact that the audience is predominantly, people that are ML practitioners in the field, just to share an anecdote from somebody in the venture capital community, I heard that I know some junior people that are reaching out to every single person on LinkedIn at the moment that have anything to do with AI or ML in their LinkedIn bio. So perhaps just wanted to get a flavor from the three of you around any tips or advice you can share with the folks that are in the audience at the moment on how best to engage with the venture community, to engage selectively, not at all, in detail. Perhaps starting with Lars, given the scale of your business.
So it's a difficult question, right? So let me try to at least my take on it is it can be difficult to manage all of the inbound. I think that after this you have different waves of AI. Right now, I follow some of the waves, and I can always feel like on the inbound on LinkedIn that you feel the wave coming. And I'm of course answering all of those inbound. No, of course not. So I think that one of the things that I see as a really, really good way of engaging with the venture capital community is actually listening for a lot of the competitive advice, because a lot of the venture capital community have a really, really good finger on the pulse in terms of the competition that they see out there in the field, and also competition on your business. I think that's just talking for myself, but others might feel it, that my idea is better than anyone else's, right? Or at least that's the feeling that you're going to end up with, right? And actually ping-ponging a little bit more on the venture capital community and the venture capitalist in terms of actually finding out whether your idea is that brilliant and getting some insights by asking enough questions back again in terms of actually finding out where your competition is. That's something that I've really felt is a good investment from my side. And it's something where we can actually get a lot of sanity checks, right? Because a lot of things that are happening out in the field, everything can feel so amazing, what people are doing out there. And you can look at LinkedIn and everyone are a success, right? But scratching a little bit underneath the surface, then you can also feel that other people are sitting with the same pains as yourself. And it's good to use that the venture capital community in that sense, because a lot of people are actually using that as their 100% everyday job in terms of finding out, scratching a little bit beneath the surface in terms of finding out where people are at this moment, right? So.
And Yash, anything for you to add, being in San Francisco and Silicon Valley?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's always this temptation, especially for newer founders, to, you know, sort of jump at the exciting things, right? And one of the things that's exciting when you're building a company is when other people start seeing, you know, what you're building and being interested by it, seeing your vision. And so, you know, when VCs are reaching out, it can often feel like, oh, wow, that's like, you know, it's a really cool thing. And it is, and you should be excited by it, right? At the same time, you know, the core of your business is to like go and build a business, right? And so it's worth talking to folks who are, you know, really high intent, who really like have conviction in what you're doing. And also getting to know folks more generally. But I mean, I know that we're really excited to have worked with Prosus because you guys are so high conviction, right? I feel like it gives us the ability to like go and focus on building, right? So I guess as a kind of like general advice, which of course would vary if, you know, we had more specifics about any one person situation. But as some kind of general advice, I'd say, building is the most important thing. It's good to sort of get to know people in the field and build relationships with people, but really focus on the folks who are highest conviction.
Thank you. Pietro, anything that you'd like to add from your perspective?
Sure. Yeah, Yash, I love that word conviction. That's kind of my perspective too. Although we're early on our journey, like we raised some pre-seed 2 years ago. And so I'm here to listen as much as I am to preach. But I would say, you know, try to engage with future-facing people if you have a future-facing idea. Try not to get discouraged and find that conviction. A shout out to Paul and Euro. When we first sat down with them, we were selling through an idea that might be 5 years out and a problem that didn't even exist yet. And they saw potential in it. And that was, not everyone's going to see potential in your idea, especially if you're solving a problem that's further out. So, stay the course, stay with your vision, and with the right people, they can make the magic happen.
Awesome. Paul, back to you.
Yeah. Given, given where we are on time and also, you know, we've got, I think today, a few thousand people listening. Most of the folks in the conference or the event are ML practitioners. And I'm of the fundamental belief that in the next wave of AI companies, we're going to be in need of founders like yourselves that have a strong technical background, that have a strong intuition with what, where's the right time and space to, deploy this technology in a safe way, in an impactful way. So I'd actually, given you have, maybe similar background to many of the folks listening, maybe ask each of you for one piece of advice you wish you had known before starting your AI company that you'd like to share with folks here that hopefully will help them if they ever take the step in the same direction. So maybe starting in the same order, Lars, you want to share some words?
One piece of advice.
Well, if you have more, feel free.
I think it's difficult to get that right. I think that follow your conviction is really good. I learned from you guys here. Don't be discouraged and stay sane. That's one piece of advice. Split in three, right?
Thanks for that, Lars. Yash?
Yeah, I would say that because there's so many cool things going on in the field right now, it's really important to focus on what gets you internally motivated, right? So instead of looking at sort of external kind of motivations, look at what really gets you going internally.
That's I think that's important for everybody probably, and especially if you're going to dedicate such an important part of your life to a mission like founding a company. And Pietro, how about you?
Yeah, when I look back, I kind of wish I knew what terms were going to come to be, and so I could use those instead of taking a paragraph to explain it. And then now Gen AI, boom, that's the term. So I would say, like, as you're inventing things, really try to latch on to what the, what culture is calling what you're doing. Don't get stuck in you know, the way you used to explain it, especially if you're inventing something. But yeah, ultimately follow your conviction. I guess I'm just going to reflect what's been said before.
Great. Follow, do what you love, and don't get distracted by let anyone else change what your conviction should be. That's fantastic. Thank you guys for joining. And Sandeep, also, thanks for joining the conversation and taking the time. I know it's either very late or very early for some of you. So I hope we get to continue the conversation very soon again. And now I'd like to maybe hand it over to Dimitrios, who's going to change the topic to something related to mystic wizards like Gandalf.
Oh, yes. Over to thou shalt not pass.
Yeah. I'm Emmanuel Mason, machine learning engineer at Stripe and author of Building Machine Learning Powered Applications. And if you don't want your machine learning models to explode, well, you should subscribe to this podcast.